Hello and welcome. My name is Gilad Berenstein, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the AI and Faith podcast. On this podcast, we're bringing together experts from our community and thought leaders from around the world so that together we can learn the key lessons required to build a world where AI benefits humanity and all of us individually.
So for most religious robots, they are not really ready to be used in practice yet. And on top of that, there isn't just one theological position. There's a whole diversity and plurality of perspectives. So one major challenge is, how do we design robots or religious technologies in general in a way that can actually reflect that plurality of viewpoints that we have in religions?
As many of you know, I am deeply focused on AI within my professional capacity and spent a lot of time in the travel hospitality industry. One of the most used lines in my recent speeches is AI and robots are coming to a hotel near you and soon. The cost of manufacturing robots is rapidly dropping, and the business sector is excited about the upcoming robot rollout. Thus, it felt like the right time for us at AI and Faith to dive into this topic and to see what lessons and ancient wisdom we can bring to this conversation. To help us kick this off, we have the perfect guest joining us today to talk all about robots, social robots, and religious technology. So let's get started. Thank you so much for joining us today. To kick things off, please start by telling us a bit about yourself and your areas of focus.
Thank you very much for having me. So my name is Anna Puzio, and I'm a philosopher and theologian based in Bern, Switzerland, and in Vienna, in Austria. In my work, I focus on the ethics of technology, so basically how we can use and develop technology responsibly. And a big part of what I do is also looking at the intersections of religion and AI.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. Now, before we jump into robots specifically, let's start really broadly with religious technology. So take us all the way to the 10,000 foot view. What is religious technology and what are some of the things included within that category?
There are all kinds of religious technologies out there. It's a booming field. We've had Bible apps for a long time, but today there's also religious bots, religious avatars, LMMs, death tech, and even religious robots.
And do you see this field kind of more prominent in parts of the world or within specific religions, or is this kind of even?
It's booming and there's clearly a lot of hype, but compared to other technologies, these religious technologies are often less advanced. Take religious robots or religious LMMs, for example, they can't really compete with social robots more broadly or with systems like ChatGPT or Gemini. And of course, it also depends a lot on the region and the faith tradition. So for instance, robots tend to be more accepted in Japan than in European Christianity.
Absolutely. Now, based on your research and your expertise, have you seen different faiths adopt this more than others? And what do those faiths have in common? Is it that certain faiths have certain elements in common that makes them more likely to adopt technology? Or is it more based on geography and things like that?
It's also based on the philosophy, the ethics, and conceptions of life or non-life. Religions have different relationships to animals, so some animals are sacred. Some objects can be alive or sacred in different religions, and this also changes our relationship to technology.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point you just made there about kind of how they think about life in general being a really big part of that. So I want to come back to this in just one second. And then begin to introduce the concept of social robots. So starting again at a very high level, what is a social robot and where are we kind of in the global rollout of social robots?
So there's a huge range of robots for all kinds of areas of life, entertainment, military, disaster response. And there are social robots which are specifically designed for social interaction, for example, in therapy and education. Some of them are humanoid, so they have a human-like shape, and others look like animals or even plush toys. For instance, the teddy bear robot Huggable. And these robots are already pretty widespread, even though a lot of them still don't work as well as we might imagine from science fiction.
That makes perfect sense. And you talk about social interaction, and I'm really curious, like you already touched on a few examples, but like, is this just beginning or are there already a lot of people in the world who really have these kind of social relationships with these robots?
It's both. So it's still an early adaption, but we do have some robots for a long time. So there are robots used in healthcare, in therapy, in education, for examples. And we can also see from these examples that people tend to form close relationships with these kinds of robots.
And I wonder if there's any data on, like, I imagine these people are finding value. They're finding that they're happier or somehow more fulfilled from these robots. Is there also data on the other side, or are we too early to have any definitive information here?
Yeah, there are empirical studies on this, but we still need more studies to come to to good results because we have studies contradicting each other. So we have both benefits, for example, in therapy with dementia, in healthcare, with autism. So in autism, for example, that people tend to open up with these kind of robots. But on the other side, we also have studies that show that these robots might be not beneficial at all.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, is there a difference, either morally or practically, between a bot, like a non-physical AI bot, and a robot that is semi-embodied, or whatever you want to call robots being here in this world? Are there like ethical difference? Are there differences in kind of the impact of these bots versus robots?
Yes, of course. So there are differences if we look at on the body, how we design bodies, virtual bodies or physical bodies, humanoid design, non-humanoid design, diverse design, not diverse design, safety. So there's misuse and violence also in the virtual sphere, but we also have safety in the case of physical harm, for example. So there are different, also different relationships and different ways how we relate to them.
Yeah, and I have to imagine at this point there are many more bots being used by people out there in the world than there are robots. And I can use my own personal example. Like, I have many AI bots that I use at work, but I have no robots that I use at work or in life or whatever. And I'm really curious, again, it might be too early. Like, do we see the efficacy go up? Like, if we use therapy or a medical robot or something like that, do we see the efficacy on the human go up in a robot versus a non-physical bot? For example, if we were doing something like having a robot that was helping deal with loneliness in Japan, and I'm wondering, like, if chatting with a bot where it has no physical body, you have to chat through like an open AI or through a phone app or whatever, if that is more or less effective in kind of reducing loneliness, if that's the goal of this interaction, than if there was like a physical robot, whether it's like a little fake pet or even a humanoid type robot in there, and if there's any data you've seen about the differences of the impact.
I think that the aspect you mentioned earlier is an important aspect. So the aspect of access. So we have many bots, but it's way harder with robots. So they are physical. We need the material. We need and the access to robots via smartphones and computers, iPads is way easier. So for example, there are studies on how we open up towards these bots. So for example, there are studies that show that we tend to open up more with bots than with other human beings, for example. So there's this comparison that we tend to not talk to people about everything, but with bots, we tell them all our personal data and also, some secrets maybe. So it's easier for us. It's difficult to compare it with robots because robots are embodied. They're in a space, in a room. So, for example, from my experience with the Now robot or Pepper robot, we tend to treat them more like a child because they are also designed like a child. They have childish voices. They fall down. So the relations also depends on how they're designed as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about that design element and how that impacts the way we interact with it. I think that's a really thoughtful elf, something that none of people are speaking about. Now, I want to bring your philosophy hat back on and to talk a little bit about ethics. And the way I think about that is kind of in three buckets. And I think they go from easiest to hardest, but you'll tell us. You know, the first one is what ethics robots have towards humans. The second one is what ethics robots should have towards other robots. And then, of course, seeming to me the most complicated one is what ethics we as humans need to have towards robots. So, starting with kind of the simple one, how should we think about the ethics that we should be programming into robots towards us humans?
So one huge question in this discourse is, are these robots moral actors at all? And that's really hard to say because what even counts as a moral actor? Robots are different in many ways from what we usually mean by human moral actors. Ethical moral decisions, for example, they are often tied to reflection, context, emotions, experience, and a lot more. At the same time, I think it would also be wrong to deny them any form of moral agency altogether. Because we are in a relationship with these systems, and in that sense, they clearly shape how we make decisions. Robots, and even more so LLMs in our everyday life, or LLM-based bots, give us advice or at least information. And based on that information, we then make important decisions in law, research, daily life, and medicine. And then looking at these cases that you mentioned, there are, for example, big questions around safety and protection. So is it acceptable for a robot to deceive a person, for example, by pretending to have feelings? Or how do we protect privacy if a robot is always listening and watching? And the last case, robot and human, there are also questions about how we treat them. So is it morally wrong to kick or insult a robot? There was a well-known case where people found it disturbing to see someone kick a robotic dog.
So you talked about privacy, which I think is a really interesting one. So right, as we think about these robots being rolled out in hotels, they will overhear conversation, they will see maybe who's going in the elevator with each other. There may be other things that these robots observe that we want to have in privacy. And I'm curious, I mean, and it's complicated because we're like, if we just think about it in a vacuum, we could say, well, the robot shouldn't share any information that it collects from humans. It should keep that all private. But it's easy to come up with edge cases where there might be violence or danger or things like that, where you may want the robot to call the police or the hotel manager. So I'm curious, based on your own faith or other research that you have done, how you think about balancing that, you know, and I'll even add one more element of complexity, which is that at least for now, we think of these robots as property. I own the robot, and in theory, if it's property, can do almost whatever I want with that piece of property, which then asks the question of like, can the robot hurt another robot if I ask it to, if I need it to? So, anyways, what have you found in your research on these areas?
Yes, also one problem in this context is that we humans, we form relationships with these kind of robots, so they are more than a desk for us. So they interact. It's also we're in the kind of symbiosis with them. So they adapt to us and we adapt to them. So they are like collaboration partners. We co-act together. And this is why they can be part of our identity or kind of our research or the work we are doing. And this makes, the whole topic also a bit vulnerable. So this is what also should be reflected in this context, I think.
Yeah, this is all so complicated, and it's just going to continue to happen as we roll them out into our world and have more robots around us. Now, switching a little bit to think about religious robots specifically and the use of these kind of machines within our religious lives. So the first question is, you gave us a few examples on top at the beginning of the conversation, but maybe a little bit more of where are religious robots being utilized and a few examples of how religious people are using them within their faith.
Religious robots are robots that are used in religious practices. They can be used to accompany people in prayer, to have conversations about religious topics, to support religious ceremonies or even lead them, to read out religious text or to play religious music. And yes, we do have real-world examples. I'd say there are maybe 20 or 30 of them, though it really depends on how you count, like whether you include smaller private developers and local initiatives as well. And different religions have developed their own religious robots. So in Christianity, for example, there are robots like Celeste and Santo. In Japan, there's Pepper. Pepper has been used for funerals, so it's rather a non-religious robot, are used for a religious practice. And then there are others like Mindark, Cyanar, and many more, but as I said, they are often less advanced than non-religious technologies.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, putting on our faith hats, kind of from a perspective of faith and from a human perspective of faith, can these robots pray with us? Can these robots pray for us? Can these robots pray at all? And, you know, I was thinking about kind of this potential continuum of where a robot may be engaging within a religious service. And I was thinking on kind of one extreme end, the robot's almost like an interactive book. Like you can talk to it about what's in the holy book or in your Bible. It can read it to you. It can give you some context or whatever. Versus kind of like the next step up, it's almost like a fellow congregant. It's another person of faith sitting next to you, like I said, praying with you, praying for you, whatever. And then of course, the highest potential level is it becomes your pastor, your priest, your rabbi. Yeah, from a faith perspective, what is it actually doing, and how do you think about it from your own faith perspective?
Yeah, there's also a huge discussion that compares it with media, for example. So are they media mediators, etc.? And so I think their role still has to be figured out. And it's also about how we design them and for which purposes we develop them. So in Christianity, for example, I think we quickly tend to see them mainly as tools. But I also think we need to be honest. They're often too interactive and their influence can be too significant for them to be just a tool.
Yeah, absolutely. And they certainly don't feel like a tool once you've integrated them into your life in different ways. And I think about that a lot, the idea of can it pray for you? And, we spent some time last season on the podcast talking about AI consciousness. And we had this incredible conversation where we had a rabbi, a Buddhist scholar, and a pastor who came and talked to us about AI consciousness. And of course, from many of the perspectives, the Buddhist perspective is, of course, a bit different. Because it is not a human being, it is not in direct relationship with God. And thus, I would imagine, I didn't ask this directly, but I imagine they would say the AI cannot pray for you because it's not able to communicate with God in the way that another human could pray for you to get healthy or whatever they might pray for you to do. And I'm curious, based on your own research, like where does the overlap with consciousness come into the conversation? And does it even matter? Like, does it even matter if it's conscious to answer the questions we're talking about today?
So I'm very hesitant about the current AI consciousness debate because I don't think that this is one of the really important questions in today's AI discourse. I worry that it distracts us from more urgent issues like responsibility, for example. And in philosophy, we don't have a universal definition of consciousness, so we are still discussing it. And we still can't even properly define and pin down our own consciousness, and we can't reliably identify it in other humans or animals either. And I'm wondering that if we interact with AI, with technology, with robots, whether it really matters for us to define consciousness, or whether this is something that we simply decide in the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of the things that I think is really complicated is that, as you said exactly right, we have no idea exactly how consciousness comes about. And because of that, it's very hard to say, has it or will it come about within these bots or within these robots? But of course, like you said, as they get integrated into our lives, many of us will feel like they're conscious, whether or not they really are. And there's a lot of really interesting questions within there. Getting back to the main topic of religious robots, I'm thinking a little bit about training. Like, how does the doctrine get in there? How do they actually learn the doctrine? And I imagine this can be complex because there's different sects and different parts within a religion that maybe have different interpretations.
Yeah, so I think that this is actually one of the biggest problems with religious robots. From a theological perspective, they are often not developed in a very adequate way, and many of them feel more like engineering experiments than serious religious technology. So they don't really interpret text in depth. They tend to work with keywords, and then that can lead to outputs that don't match the actual message or context. So for most religious robots, they are not really ready to be used in practice yet. And on top of that, there isn't just one theological position. There's a whole diversity and plurality of perspectives. So one major challenge is how do we design robots or religious technologies in general in a way that can actually reflect that plurality of viewpoints that we have in religions?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'm curious, like, how much autonomy, I know there's not that many examples yet, but when people are putting these religious robots into the world, how much autonomy are they getting? Like, are people, like, thinking of a Catholic perspective, like, are people going to confession with a robot, or like, how much autonomy are they getting?
So I think that they should be designed in a way that they don't restrict human autonomy, but instead expand our own room to act, our agency, and strengthen relationships then.
That makes a lot of sense. Expanding our autonomy, but not giving them too much autonomy at this stage. Now, when we were speaking and preparing for this call, you mentioned a little study that you did at an event in Germany. Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I actually did a study with a religious robot in Erfurt at the Katholikentag in Germany some years ago. And that was really interesting because I noticed that people were much more open to the technology than I expected, and they were very excited about this these religious robots.
And what were some of the things that they were most either excited to use it for, or what are some of the concerns that you maybe heard from people?
So the people in the workshop, they came from different institutions. They had different roles and tasks at the institutions. So everyone was thinking about their own task and also some problems, issues where robots could improve processes. So they had very creative and different ideas, even for leadership. This was interesting. Also, one of the aspects that came out very early or from the beginning, even before the workshop started, was gender, for example. So, because in the Catholic Church, women can't be priests, and then they reacted immediately that before the robot becomes a priest first, woman first. So this was also very interesting.
That is fascinating. Now, before we wrap up this part of the conversation, I'm wondering what advice you have for religious people of faith who are thinking about adopting robots within their faith. What advice do you have? What should they do? Maybe what should they avoid doing?
I think we first need more empirical studies to figure out whether these technologies actually help people in their religious practices or not. And of course, this is also something that everyone can figure out or solve for themselves. I'd be in favor of technologies that support and strengthen community structures and relationships within religions. So also not reinforce old hierarchies, but offer new structures, for example, and strengthen relationships. And a key concept in Christianity and in many other religions as well is creation and justice. And I think we need a more reflective approach to AI, and we need also to understand that AI is an industry and comes with real costs, often burdened by the environment, by workers in the global south. I think this perspective needs to be much more stronger in the AI discourse.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. As you know, there's people in our community from many faiths all over the world, and they're all grappling with the questions of where, how, and when should technology be brought into their spiritual practice. So we're so grateful for you sharing this with us and for the work that you do. Now, before we let you go, we do want to talk a little bit about your own personal faith perspective and how you use artificial intelligence within your own personal faith. And our regular listeners will know that this is a new segment we've added this year, really trying to see how our experts around the world are embracing AI within their own faith. So my first question is, have you used artificial intelligence of any kind in your own personal religious observance?
Yeah, I've tried these systems, of course, but I mainly use them to study religious technology because when it comes to religion, I'm more of a fan of human-to-human relationships. But of course, if you like to have an overview, data concerning religious text, etc., they can be really helpful.
And then next, where do you see opportunities for other members of your faith to be able to adopt AI? Where does it make sense within your faith?
So these technologies for me only can make sense when we also use them to support and strengthen community structures, because community structures and relationships are a big part of religious communities, also human-human relationships. I think they have to be used in a way that religion doesn't turn out to be an individualistic lifestyle product that everyone does with their with their own bot and robot at home. But still, that connects people, brings them into a discussion with each other.
That definitely resonates with me from a Jewish perspective. Of course, being in community is really a core part of what so many of the commandments in Judaism require us to do. So I love that answer. How can we use AI and robotics to further build community, not to take us out of community? Now we do have a lightning round, two questions, 15 seconds apiece. They're very easy. Question number one is, what is your favorite personal use case for artificial intelligence? What do you like to do with it?
So it depends on the understanding of AI, of course, but I really enjoy the interactions with robots, so the real world interactions, what we're trying to do, interacting with a physical bot, a robot.
Absolutely. I have to tell you, one of my favorite use cases right now is taking the essays and articles I write and creating infographics based on them in Notebook LM. And they always look so good. So that's one of my favorite current AI use cases. If you had a robot in your own household, what are the first few tasks you'd want it to do for you?
So I think that they are still not so good to do all the household tasks, but of course, I would use them for my household. Maybe also for organizing, but only if they would really function.
Absolutely. For me, it's the dishes. I never want to do the dishes after dinner.
Okay.
That is wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. As I said at the beginning, robots are coming into our world and they're coming into our world soon. And we're so grateful to have you thinking about these important topics and to everyone in the AI and faith community for engaging in a way that we make sure that AI benefits humanity and all of us individually. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Stay tuned to listen to more conversations and interviews with experts from around the world. In the meantime, follow and rate our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and share it with your friends. Don't forget to follow us on social media. We are on LinkedIn, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for joining us.